My basic hypothesis here, and I'm sort of trying it out on you all, is that this is the end of, or we've long passed the end of the era of low-hanging fruit. That OSHA has made some difference in preventing occupational injury and illness, but has really reached its limits in terms of the way the current enterprise works. And fixing it around the margins is not going to do that much good. We have to rethink the entire enterprise. Let's talk first a little bit about what has OSHA accomplished. I think it has prevented work-related fatalities and injuries in a significant way, and we can talk about that. There's some rhetoric out there, and you can certainly look at the press releases from Bureau of Labor Statistics in the, actually from the Labor Department, but using BLS statistics over in the exhibit poll, talking about the great successes OSHA continues to make in reducing injury rates, and the big question is how real is that? We'll get to that. I think OSHA has been successful in preventing occupational illnesses from certain well-recognized hazards. But the question I raise here is that, you know, the low-hanging fruit? Is the next advance that much more difficult? Let's talk about fatalities. This slide. There are two more bars that are supposed to be in this. Oh, there they go. I wasn't supposed to do that. Celeste made the slides. That's what she knows. Where are the bars? That isn't the question she asks usually in New City. But as you can see, the fatality rate in 1974, about the time OSHA was getting going, 10 per 100,000 workers, that's gone down significantly. Some of that's going to be change in essentially industry mix. But I think OSHA has really made a big difference there. What we were trying to get, we didn't have time to find, are those same bars from 100 years ago. And in some industries, they're just astounding. So obviously, some of the, a great deal of the advancement we've made has nothing to do with OSHA. It's occurred long before OSHA began. But I think OSHA has contributed, certainly in terms of, lockout, tagout. There are a lot of areas where OSHA really has made a big difference. But fatalities really have sort of stabilized in terms of their rates over the last 10 or 20 years. It's worth noting that fatality statistics were considered very, questionable. There were a lot of problems in fatality statistics. In the 80s and the early 90s, there was the Institute of Medicine and the National Academy of Sciences pulled a panel together to look at ways to make sure those are collected sort of accurately and consistently, and it's made a big difference. Everybody recognizes that that was a very useful effort, but that only was for fatalities. The injury statistics are a different matter. The first thing is, when you look at both the statistics, they say injuries and illnesses. And I don't need to tell this crowd that illnesses aren't really even part of this, but let's just talk about injuries. There have been two studies that recently they're really quite useful to look at. Ken Rosenman did one, and then Layout, who's I guess at Stanford, or I can't remember where he is, essentially showing that most work-related injuries never get picked up in BLS data. Ken Rosen's study is Ken here? The group in Michigan did a great study where they just looked at other places where people report occupational injuries, workers' compensation, for example, or injuries that come into trauma centers, and they don't get into the BLS statistics. So the true burden of occupational injury is far higher than what we're seeing. We don't know how big it is, but we know it's out there. And given that less than half actually get counted, it's hard to figure out if the statistics are real, because if a third are counted versus 60% are counted, it's a big difference. Anyway, the other thing, of course, is illnesses just don't get counted. I mean, everybody knows that. Certain types of illnesses, musculoskeletal conditions in certain industries get reported, but lots and lots don't, and obviously most chronic diseases other than musculoskeletal never get into the system at all, cancer cases, et cetera, lung disease. Injury rates, and this is, again, injury and illness rates, but I don't think illness is really part of this, have been essentially, were steady for a while, went up a little bit, but really were steady through the 80s, and then starting in the 1990s, have been decreasing very steadily and very impressively. In fact, even last year, they went down 5%. This is how I sort of describe it, that from 72 to 92, there was a modest drop, 18% over 20 years. I think some of that's real, could be a reflection of other things as well. But since 92, there's been almost a 50% drop in injuries, and this was accomplished, as you've seen before, with fewer OSHA inspectors, more workplaces. Very impressive impact. So is it, what's going on there? And obviously, there could be some true decrease in risk, which would you probably then suggest is the success of the OSHA advice program, because the inspection program, we know, is decreasing in many ways. Probably, to some extent, affect the change in the mix of industries. Hazardous industries are moving. We have more people in certain white collar jobs. But the same decrease is seen in a lot of industry-specific statistics, which suggests it's not just industry mix question. Or if it are the fact of changes in reporting, which is, turns out, and there's a very good group at the University of Illinois, Chicago, who I've never met these people, but I've talked to them on the phone, I've read their articles, they're really quite terrific. Essentially looking at, you know, what could the cause of this drop be, and they've suggested that it's really an artifact of reporting changes. And they have a couple of ways to look at that. It's worth reading their papers. Very convincing evidence that it isn't true, a true drop. So there you are with injury. So we're probably at the same place, and it's not clear to me, and I think John Mendeloff's work is very important, if we step up site fines, we step up inspections, how much better will we do? I don't know. And there's no indication that it would make a huge impact. Illness, though, is a different question. I think OSHA has made an impact. It's very hard to measure decreases in occupational illness. Most of this is the latency period for some of the illnesses that we're looking at occur so much later. And because the statistics never pick any of them up, of course. But we know that OSHA has reduced exposure to some of the important hazards. Asbestos, silica exposures are reduced, though they're still out there. Lead, cotton dust. When exposures are down, we know that that will prevent illnesses down the line. OSHA's greatest failure, of course, is ergonomics failure, in that they recognized the problem, tried to deal with it, and then were stopped. But we know, for example, bisonosis, maybe it's the easiest one to measure because the cases occurred relatively quickly after exposure. And after the OSHA cotton dust standard, we started seeing decreases in bisonosis cases. And very successful, of course, that industry has cleaned up and now totally left the country. The challenges to OSHA's ability to prevent occupational illness really are quite significant. And Frank referred to this. In fact, Frank coined the phrase procedural Botox, which I like very much. If OSHA were to want to issue new standards, the requirements within the executive branch, and this is not just the Republican executive branch, but the executive branch, to go through these various hoops and, you know, essentially there are many, many checks and many, many ways to stop you from moving forward, makes it very difficult for an agency to issue standards. The current OSHA health standards are inadequate and outdated. Frank talked about the successful adaptation of the 1968 ACGIH standards. And it's worth noting that those 1968 standards, many of them were outdated in 1968. So I sort of put this together in sort of the Harper's Index mode. There are about 60,000 chemicals in commerce. OSHA has more or less 500 PELs for permissible exposure limits for different chemicals. EPA has identified about 3,000 what they call high production volume chemicals. Those are chemicals which we use 1 million pounds a year, either producing it or importing it. OSHA has about 200 of those 3,000 OSHA actually has a PEL for. So about 300 OSHA PELs are for chemicals that are not widely used either. Of those 500 PELs, 470 were adopted, you know, 1970, 1971, from, in many cases, outdated 1968 ACGIH standards, and three new OSHA PELs in the last 15 years. One of which, the only one recently, was hexavalent chromium, which was the result of a 10-year lawsuit. Eventually, the federal court said, it's like waiting, you know, you got to just, you know, they have to issue a standard. That's really been it. But this says, even if OSHA wanted to issue more standards, a chemical-by-chemical standards egg is not going to work. So what can OSHA do? What I would say in the short run, they can, without legislation, issue comprehensive workplace safety health program standard. I think that's the first thing that OSHA should do in a new administration, which essentially say every employer has to evaluate what the exposures are, what the hazards are in their workplace, and figure out how to address those hazards. And when the OSHA inspector comes in, they have to look at the program and say, are you meeting your program? I had a program like that at the Energy Department called Price Anderson. Every facility we had to have a safe work plan. The only standard we ever had to cite was quality assurance, quality control. If you didn't meet your own plan, we could cite you. Very straightforward. Obviously, they should revive the general duty clause. OSHA has stopped essentially using it. When you don't have a standard for something, you've got to use the general duty clause. What can Congress do? And Frank has talked about this a lot. Certainly, there are a lot of voluntary standards, ACJ-type standards, that are out there that, with one simple piece of legislation, OSHA could just promulgate or implement if Congress said, go ahead and do it. But short of that, it would be quite difficult. You could require OSHA to issue specific standards. You know, diacetyl is, you know, perhaps there's some people working on that now. I know that OSHA has worked on a beryllium standard, a silica standard. It's caught somewhere in the interstices of the Perkins building. Those obviously should be released, but probably take an act of Congress to do that. But that's not enough, obviously. And then the question is, what do we do? I think there are two things which we should be thinking about. One is, how do we put worker safety and health back into the public spotlight to make people care about this? How to recognize it's not just the miners in Sago and Crandall Canyon, but workers are dying like that all the time in different situations, and we have to be aware of that and make it a priority for the country. And the hard task for us in this room is to rethink the system through which we as a society ensure that workers aren't killed, injured, or made sick on their jobs. The current OSHA's inspection enforcement, you know, standard system is not working, and we've got to think about better ways to do that.